It is really the basic question of all scripture. Well, it's really the basic question of all life. It's the only question that really matters. Who is Jesus? We're going to be answering that question here in the first 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. You know, it could be answered in the first 5 minutes, but there's so much to say. What Jesus does the New Testament deliver to us? If we take the New Testament seriously, which is not to be taken for granted nowadays, if we take the New Testament seriously, who is Jesus as delivered to us in the Bible, in the New Testament? Dr. Charles Geeshan will be our guest here in the first 25 minutes of the program from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll be talking about that. Judy Brown joins us in about 25 minutes from the American Life League, one of the few groups that is raising questions about Alberto Gonzalez, the next attorney general. You can count on it. He'll be the next attorney general unless something tremendously unforeseen takes place. And what puzzles me about the right wing's cheerleading for Alberto Gonzalez is that he has a record on the Texas Supreme Court. Granted, he only served a year, but one of the decisions he rendered there involved a case of a teenage girl getting an abortion. The law in Texas is parents need to be notified. He ruled that it was okay for the parents not to be notified when this teenage girl got an abortion. He did more than that. The dissenters on that court, he said that they were engaging in an unprecedented act of judicial activism. Alberto Gonzalez, our new attorney general, not altogether pro-life. Why isn't the right a little more concerned about this? And why aren't you hearing anything about that particular decision from the Christian Coalition or from even some of our friends, Concerned Women for America Family Research Council? It's a good question. We'll get the answer from Judy Brown when we talk to her in about 30 minutes. Then we'll round off the first hour. Captain John Walrobby will join us, Chaplain Corps for the United States Navy. We're going to talk about ministry to soldiers on this Veterans Day here on Issues, Etc. That's the first hour of the program. In the second hour, we'll be listening to Joyce Meyer. She's got a message that comes out every week. We'll just be walking through her message. Some good advice. I got to tell you folks in advance, now this isn't all I have to say, but in her message this week, can't really find anything I disagree with blatantly. So we will hear what she has to say. And I have a few more things to say about Joyce Meyer and her message this week. Then, in the third hour of the program, we'll be hearing from Pastor George Name. Am I right here, Jeffy? No, don't even try it. All right. Pastor George, about his journey from Coptic Christianity to the Reformation. That's in the third hour of the program. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I will know how to pronounce his name by the time we get there, I suppose. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Charles Geeshan is our guest, chairman of the Department of Exegetical Theology and associate professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, and author of an article in the latest For the Life of the World magazine titled, Who Do You Say I Am? The Identity of Jesus in the New Testament. Dr. Geeshan, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be with you again.
It doesn't seem like a complicated question. Do we really have to make the case? Doesn't everybody basically know who Jesus is?
Well, as we can see, even when Jesus asked his disciples, who do men say that I am, he had various responses, you know, prophet, some say Elijah, and today it's only become more complicated, where people have various opinions on, you know, obviously a lot of people know about Jesus, something about him, but as far as knowing that he is true God incarnate, that's another thing. People think of him as prophet, a wise teacher, maybe an apocalyptic prophet, somebody who was talking about the end times, or somebody who was trying to overthrow Roman rule. There's all sorts of conceptions out there that are floated, some within the scholarly realm, others, you know, just within the popular realm. The Da Vinci Code basically says Christians developed Jesus into who he is. So it is a very mixed bag out there, and by no means do we have, even within the Christian, some Christians, a clear understanding of who Jesus is.
I think that's what we're going to deal with, the latter part of your comment there, for the most part here. People are often confused, however, for the last almost 200 years now, Bible scholars have been talking about the so-called historical Jesus. Should we be alerted when we hear a phrase like this, the historical Jesus?
Absolutely, because usually what that means is they do not believe that the portrait of Jesus' life, ministry, and certainly also his resurrection is reflective of history. There are some scholars that are very skeptical about the Gospels reflecting what Jesus actually said, or at least that everything they say Jesus said, that he actually said those things, or that he actually did some of the things that, such as the miracles, especially his own physical resurrection, is under doubt by biblical scholars. So whenever that topic is brought up, this is, you know, we're looking for the historical Jesus. Usually that means they're expressing doubt about the testimony of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in terms of the words and deeds of Jesus being actually truthful, you know, that those are truthful and accurate portraits of the life and ministry of Jesus.
One other point of confusion before we get into the main point of your article, which is, mm-hmm. I think, brilliant, that Jesus' work is what reveals who he really is. But people will hear, or they will be confronted with the question, Jesus never claimed to be God, never claimed to be the Son of God. Christians are confronted with this question and often confused because they look in their concordance and they can't find some place where it says in red letters, I am God. Can you clear up the confusion?
Yeah, I mean, there are many places in the Gospels that show Jesus had an understanding of himself as within the mystery of the one true God of Israel, the Lord. Namely, you have him using the same, like in the Gospel of John as an example, when our English readers will recognize the I am, you know, like I am the bread of life, or I am the light of the world, or I am the good shepherd. There are other phrases in the Gospel of John where Jesus simply says, I am. And, you know, it's translated variously from the Greek, so sometimes people don't recognize it in English translations. But the one that most people would recognize, at least, is the most familiar one would be John 8:58, where Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. You know, these sayings show forth the understanding that Jesus is using a similar way of identify himself that was used by the Lord in the Old Testament, where you have the same kind of disclosure statement used by the Lord through the prophet Isaiah, also through Moses at the end of Deuteronomy. So when Jesus uses that kind of phrase, the absolute statement, it really is showing his own self-identity, that he understands himself as none other than the one God of Israel. Another one that's very misunderstood a lot by English readers is the phrase, the Son of Man. If you look through the Gospels, it's one of the most frequent titles Jesus uses for himself. You know, the Son of Man must suffer and die and rise again. And, you know, yet what that is so often understood by English readers is that that's a reference to Jesus' humanity. You'll even have, I mean, most of our listeners probably are familiar with the hymn, Beautiful Savior, where at the end it says, you know, Son of Man and Son of God, almost as if those two titles are reflecting his human nature and his divine nature. It's much better, however, to understand the fact that when Jesus uses that title, Son of Man, he's using it because first century Jews understood this title as a title for the image of God, the pre-existent Messiah who would come and deliver Israel and the world at the end of time. And that's Daniel 7:13, where that title really has its has a lot of significance, because there you see the enthroned one, and he's the end-time deliverer. So when Jesus uses this title, Son of Man, he uses it because it really was a well-known, and we know from other Jewish literature written in the, you know, prior to Christ and contemporary with Christ, that it was a very significant text, namely Daniel 7:13, and that was a very significant title. And Jews were reflecting on who is this Son of Man, and you know, looking forward to the Son of Man coming and being revealed. So when Jesus uses it, he certainly is using it with that understanding, and he's also redefining some of the Jewish expectations. That the Son of Man is not one who would just come on a throne and just kind of wipe off Israel's enemies, but he was one who would come and suffer and die and be victorious through that suffering and death and then resurrection. So obviously he uses it in a way that reflects that he is the very visible image of Yahweh, the pre-existent Son of Man, but also that he's changing their understandings of who that Messiah figure would be by teaching them that he must suffer and die and then be raised.
Now, you have written that it is Jesus' work that it reveals who he is, and I imagine people say, well, sure, he did miracles.
Right.
He healed people, he walked on water, he turned water into wine. That showed, that's how we know first and foremost that Jesus is God and who he is. How do you respond?
Well, you know, I think that's very typical when we're talking about the divine nature of Jesus, that we look to some of these rather spectacular things in that Jesus did in terms of nature miracles or healing miracles. But it's interesting to see where Jesus points us in terms of understanding his identity. And so often he downplays these things, like when he cast out demons, he actually tells, you know, don't talk about it. Or when he shows his disciples his divine nature at the Transfiguration, he tells them, no, don't go. You know, and that was the inner circle, Peter, James, and John. He tells them, no, don't go talking about this. And it tells us that Jesus wants people to understand him, who he is, primarily through one special his special work, namely through his death and his resurrection. It is especially in his giving of himself, his life on the cross. It's that work that really reveals who God is and what kind of God we have, what kind of God the creator of the universe is, what kind of God the God of Israel is. He is a God who sacrifices, who shows that kind of grace and mercy, that he directs his wrath towards sin, not at those who deserve it, but within himself, or to himself, specifically upon the Son who was incarnate and who suffered. You know, for example, right after his transfiguration, Jesus points his disciples to how they should really understand him when he said, when he taught them that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things and from the elders and chief priests and be killed and on the third day be raised. You know, he's helping them to see that it's this work, this giving of himself as a ransom for sin, all sin, overcoming sin for the life of the world, that really helps people to understand him, and even more importantly, to understand the reality of God.
Dr. Charles Geeshan is our guest, author of an article in the latest For the Life of the World magazine titled, Who Do You Say That I Am? The Identity of Jesus in the New Testament. You can read this article on the web at the website for the Life of the World. It's lifeoftheworld.com, lifeoftheworld.com. I do recommend you reading it. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. In about 15 minutes, we're going to be talking to Judy Brown, President Bush's selection to become Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and some of the problems that might loom ahead in that respect. Dr. Geeshan, you say that Jesus' work reveals who he is, Thereby, if Jesus is in fact both God and man, as you said, it reveals who God truly is. I think people today are accustomed to thinking of God as some entity that is unknowable. Jesus is an entity that is more knowable, but that God, the Godhead itself, is really still a mystery, and that Jesus just shows us the Son,
mm-hmm.
just a part of mm-hmm. the Godhead.
That's true. I mean, usually, I sometimes, when I'm talking to my students, I encourage them as they go out and shepherd their flocks, is to help people to see that Jesus is not a second string quarterback. You know, that when people know Jesus, when they see Jesus, when they hear Jesus, they know, see, and hear the fullness of God, and that Jesus reveals the fullness of God, and that it is only in the Son, finally, that we see and know and hear the Father. And, you know, too often, because the Son became incarnate, because of the very humanity of the Son, people sometimes do not view the incarnate Son as really revealing the fullness of God. Rather, you know, he's kind of an agent of God or a representative. And here's where we simply have to go back to the words of Jesus himself. You know, when you've seen me, you've seen the Father. When you see Jesus' acts and deeds, hear his words, you hear the very words of Jesus, you hear the very works, or see the very works of Jesus. Jesus emphasized this in the Gospel of John. He said, if I'm not doing the works of my Father, then do not believe me. But if I do them, even though you don't believe me in the sense of what I'm saying, believe the works, that you know and understand the Father is in me, and I am in the Father.
I was recently observing an online conversation on one of these chat rooms, and it was going back and forth. One of the people was contending, you know, we need a real relationship with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person would say, yeah, we need to go and hear the message of law and gospel, and that's how Jesus, the real Jesus, is revealed to us. Well, no, that's not what I mean. I mean a real relationship with him, as though there's something behind the scriptures
right.
that we need to mine out to get this real relationship with Jesus. Is that the way that Christians ought to think about a relationship with the risen Christ?
Well, you know, I think the key thing is to hear him where he speaks, and it's not, it's not out in some field or on some lake. It's through the scriptures, and that's where we hear him. That's where we see him acting, and I wouldn't limit it to the scriptures, because obviously have the Word of God attached to visible means. You know, where do you have that real relationship grounded in the scriptures, and also where the scriptures are attached to visible means, such as in baptism and in the Lord's Supper, where we commune with Christ. But, you know, clearly connected to where he speaks. You know, that's where you want to direct people. Where are they going to hear the voice of Jesus? And it's there, and it's there in abundance, as well as certainly where the Word of God has been connected to his means.
With only 1 minute here, when the answer comes from the apostles, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God,
right?
Beyond merely affirming the fact of his deity, what are we confessing when we confess with the apostles this about Jesus Christ? With 1 minute.
We are confessing that he is nothing less than the God-man who in his death has redeemed the world. And, you know, that he is Lord, full Godhead, that he is man, full and true human being, and also that in his death and resurrection, we have salvation, and we have a clear revelation of who our God is, that we worship, who is the one who has created and redeemed the world.
Dr. Geeshan, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, offers an opportunity every year for pastors and lay people around the church to come and hear and participate in their symposia series. Tell us about this.
Well, every year in January, this year it'll be Tuesday, January 18th through Friday, January 21st. We have pastors and laity from across the United States, as well as we have some visitors from various parts of Europe and other places in the world that converge here in Fort Wayne. And we have a focus on biblical study as far as picking a topic. This year it's Who is Jesus? The Church's Response to Christological Controversies. And that's for a day and a half. And then the second half of it is the symposium on the Lutheran Confessions. And that's focusing on the topic of the third use of the law, which is one that's always kind of a little bit of a controversial topic sometimes within our Lutheran church, but it's an important topic. The whole question of sanctification in our Christian life is very closely connected to third use of the law. So one can't go wrong between focusing on the person of Jesus for a day and a half, and then the life that he gives us and the role of the law in that life. During those days, namely January 18 through the 21st, 2005, here in Fort Wayne.
And then with less than a minute, how can a person, a layperson, benefit from attending the symposia?
Well, I think that it's always important to see that the study of theology through the Scriptures and as the Scriptures have been confessed in our Lutheran confessions is certainly it's the life, it's the bread and butter of pastors, but it's also the life of the whole church. And to see and hear the pastors and professors of our church engage these questions and to participate in that, can only be an encouraging, I think, edifying experience for the laity of our congregation and building their faith and trust in their Lord Jesus, as well as their understanding of how their church, namely their seminaries, their pastors, their professors, are passionate and concerned about the truth and sharing that truth of our Lord Jesus.
The Symposia Series at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, January the 18th through the 21st. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look under the What's New section. Dr. Charles Geeshan, thank you for being our guest.
Very good to be with you. Thank you.
Dr. Charles Geeshan, Chairman of the Department of Exegetical Theology and Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc. You can walk into just about any Christian bookstore, and you're sure to find lots of advice on the subject of parenting. But most of these books contain lots of psychology and very little theology, lots of law, and very little gospel. That's why Issues, Etc. and Concordia Publishing House are excited about our Books of the Month for November. Two books from the series titled Faithfully Parenting. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or to find out more about the Faithfully Parenting series on our website, just check issuesetc.org and click the What's New section. You can order Faithfully Parenting Teens or Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers for only $9.99 each, plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. Two books from the Faithfully Parenting series, our Issues, Etc. Books of the Month for November.
From Muslims fearful of the evil eye to people who say they're Christians but are dancing to make the spirits happy, this Global Minute lets you know these things are part of religious life in the African country of Cote d'Ivoire. A man who grew up in a Muslim home was fearful of death and didn't believe that Islamic teachings answered his concerns. Then he came across a Bible correspondence course and eventually met a missionary with Mission to the World. They met and visited often in Abidjan, the capital city of Cote d'Ivoire. Finally, Siriki gave his life to Christ. Eventually, his father discovered his decision and grabbed a machete and chased Siriki out of the house. But Siriki stood firm in his faith, and today he's a pastor with the Reformed Churches in Cote d'Ivoire. pray more Muslims in Côte d'Ivoire will accept Christ. Pray for unreached people around the world with information on the website missionvisionnetwork.org. That's missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Today is Veterans Day. With our forces fighting in Fallujah, our day of respect comes at an opportune time. Originally, it was called Armistice Day, so proclaimed by President Wilson in 1919. It was made a federal holiday in 1938, and in 1954, Congress named it Veterans Day. Our veterans and active military personnel demonstrate love. We don't associate the word military with the word love, quite the opposite. What the military does seems to be the direct antithesis of love. But imagine yourself being shot at in an airplane. Imagine your ship being torpedoed. Imagine knowing that your Humvee could be bombed. Whether you were drafted or enlisted, you are putting your life on the line for others. We are not just talking about being a good citizen and going to vote, which of course is a wonderful privilege. We are talking about facing death to save others. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. John 15:13. Our veterans demonstrated love when they put their lives on the line. It shows how confused is our society's understanding of love. It shows that love is more than romance. It is selfless service. And it shows why we today thank a vet. I'm Dale Meyer.
On the next, Joy. You don't hear music by Herbert Howells very often. 50 years ago, he set the traditional mass text in English, and we'll share some of it with you this week. Plus, Handel, Haydn, and an Irish blessing. This is Ron Clem. Be listening this week for Joy. Listen for Joy on the web at KFUO.org, and Sunday afternoons at 4:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
The American people expect and deserve a Department of Justice guided by the rule of law. And there should be no question regarding the Department's commitment to justice for every American. On this principle, there can be no compromise.
That, of course, is Alberto Gonzalez at the announcement of his appointment by President George W. Bush yesterday to be the next U.S. Attorney General. We're going to be talking about that appointment and the concern that is being raised in some quarters about Alberto Gonzalez and his record. Judy Brown is our guest here for a few minutes, president of American Life League based in Stafford, Virginia. Judy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, Todd.
The press release that came out from American Life League today begins with five words. Gonzalez wrong for Attorney General. Why so?
He's wrong for Attorney General because he has a record. His record has been with him since he came into the White House and right after President Bush was elected. Gonzalez ruled in favor of an adolescent teenager acquiring an abortion without parental consent. Gonzalez made statements that made it possible for the Democrats to defeat Patricia Owens. Gonzalez does not believe in the sanctity of the human being from the moment that person's life begins at conception. And he just, in the quote, in the tape that you played, said that there should be justice for every single American. Well, excuse me, but that includes all Americans, those that live in the womb as well. And Judge Gonzalez has made it perfectly clear he has no problem with condoning abortion.
But Judy, I got emails over the last 2 days from the Christian Coalition, from the Family Research Council, from the ACLJ.
Mm-hmm, me too.
All praising Alberto Gonzalez and this choice, none of them mentioning what you just said there?
Well, it's a matter of record. I mean, I don't make these things up. We had problems with him 4 years ago. We made statements about it at the time, expressed our concerns based on what we learned from people who were in Texas, people who lived there, people who had to tolerate Gonzalez as a judge. And it's very sad that people are not honest enough to admit that, gee whiz, you know, here we spent all this time and ran all these people around the country asking everybody to vote for George Bush, and maybe we made a mistake. The fact of the matter is, Bush is a problem right now. Within a week, he has been silent about Arlen Specter, who is a rabid pro-abortion senator, and now he has nominated for the Justice Department someone who is totally pro-abortion, according to everything that we can discern.
All right, I want your reaction to something that Jan LaRue of Concerned Women for America had to say about her expectations of Alberto Gonzalez when it came to what was begun under Ashcroft's administration at the Department of Justice, the defense of the president's ban on partial birth abortion. Here's Jan LaRue of Concerned Women for America.
We expect that Gonzalez will also continue to do the very vigorous good defense that the Ashcroft DOJ has made on behalf of the ban on partial birth abortion, which is being litigated in federal courts.
Well, what are your expectations, Judy?
Well, first of all, I've watched the Ashcroft Department of Justice deal with the partial birth abortion bill, and I wouldn't say that it's one of the most glorious moments in the history of legislative maneuvering in the pro-life movement. The whole history of the law, as a matter of fact, is terribly flawed. And I do not have a crystal ball. I cannot determine how Gonzalez is going to handle this, but I'll tell you this. There is an equally important case in Oregon with regard to physician-assisted suicide that has been led valiantly by John Ashcroft. And I'd bet money that Alberto Gonzalez does not pick up the ball and carry it with the force that John Ashcroft did. I just don't see a comparison between the two men at all.
How do you respond to someone who says, and I'm thinking what these normally pro-life groups might be, how they might be strategizing this whole Gonzalez appointment here, and what if they say, look, we got to choose our battles, and right now Arlen Specter's the big fish. We got to fry him up real good, and we can't afford to gum up the works by raising concerns about Alberto Gonzalez.
Well, you know, I have read all their press releases, and not one of them has nailed the president. And that's the problem. The president went into Pennsylvania and worked against a pro-life Republican to have Specter reelected. And now I'm telling you, as certainly as I'm sitting here talking to you on the phone, that we all can make as much noise as we possibly can with regard to Arlen Specter, and that includes American Life League. But I think that the skids have been greased and that he is going to be the next chairman of the judiciary. I'm sorry, I hope I'm wrong. But why aren't these groups pointing a finger at the president and asking him to speak up?
Why aren't they, Judy?
I don't know why, except that a lot of organizations worked for his reelection. We did not. But a lot of organizations did. And I think it makes it very difficult, if not painful, to exert pressure on the very person that you ran around the country saying was the savior of the pro-life movement.
Judy, why didn't American Life League work for the reelection of the president? He has a reputation. We're often told he has a reputation of being solidly pro-life.
Well, I am involved in the pro-life movement to speak up in defense of the personhood of innocent babies who live in the womb. I am not in the pro-life movement to be a Republican. And I don't go by rhetoric, I go by action. I have watched what the president has done. I have watched the missed opportunities. I have watched him okay more money for Planned Parenthood. I have watched him do all kinds of things that were not pro-life. And I could not, in good conscience, tell people that they should vote for him because he's, quote-unquote, the lesser of two evils. I'm sorry. He has made it very clear. He has no problem with Roe v. Wade. And if other people don't mind that, that's their business. But American Life League minds that very much.
What should the president have done in his last term? You talked about missed opportunities.
Well, he had an opportunity in the budget, foreign aid as well as the domestic budget, to cut off Planned Parenthood at the knees and to say why. He didn't do that. He okayed budgetary allowances for them at a degree of funding higher than Bill Clinton. That is just one example of something he could have done. He could have made it very clear to Senator Santorum when the partial birth abortion bill came up 2 years ago, that he wanted to sign a bill that was consistent. Therefore, he did not want the life of the mother exception in there, and he wanted Senator Santorum to fight to get it out of there. He did not do that. Every single preborn child is equally valuable and should be equally valuable under the law, and the president has not made it clear that he firmly believes that. He favors abortion in the cases of rape, incest, and life of the mother, and has said so. He has not spoken out against the morning after pill. His administration has not demanded that the FDA be investigated because they approved RU486 with little to no long-term studies. There are so many things I could point out to you, I just don't have time, but the fact of the matter is his record is unclear. We do not think that it was incumbent upon us as pro-lifers who advocate the personhood of babies to tell people to vote for him. I'm sorry.
Now, here's Patrick Truman of the Family Research Council. He is going to make the argument that I think is probably most often heard, and that has to do with the future U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez's role in helping shepherd Supreme Court nominees through the recognition and the acceptance process of the U.S. Senate.
People are very concerned about the replacement for Chief Justice Rehnquist and the possibility of other nominees. We know that in Alberto Gonzalez, we have someone who will fight for this president when the president puts up someone who meets his judicial philosophy.
Your reaction, Judy?
I do not know that. I am sorry, I do not know that. I love Patrick Truman, but I am not confident that Alberto Gonzalez will do that.
Somebody says, look, if he's anything, Gonzalez has proven himself to be a Bush man, a good team player with the Bush administration so far for 4 years and before. And if the president says, I want a judge that's going to judge impartially on the Constitution, I want a judge who is going to take a good hard look at Roe v. Wade, Alberto Gonzalez will do his duty.
And Alberto Gonzalez and the president have both said that they respect the law of the land. Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, and we want that changed. So, I mean, you can say anything you want about judicial restraint, about interpreting the Constitution properly, but to repeatedly say that you respect the law of the land, which Alberto Gonzalez is on record having said when he was a judge in Texas, makes me nervous.
Folks, we'll take your phone calls with your reactions to this selection of Alberto Gonzalez in about 5 minutes, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727 for the next few minutes. Judy Brown, president of American Life League, based in Stafford, Virginia, is our guest discussing President Bush's selection of Alberto Gonzalez to become the next attorney general. So far, I would like, if you would, simply to characterize what you think the first week of the second Bush term, you know, barring, of course, the inauguration, but the first week after the election, how is the president showing forth as a pro-life president?
Well, it's disastrous. I mean, I kept waiting for him to speak up and say something about Arlen Specter and the fact that as a staunch advocate of abortion, the president had problems with his elevation to the chairmanship of the Judiciary Committee. And nobody in the White House has said a word. In fact, they've said quite the opposite. Karl Rove has been on national television, many different programs, giving his blessing on behalf of the president to Arlen Specter, who is a known pro-abortion advocate. Arlen Specter, on the other hand, has argued very forcefully in the public that he will uphold the same principles he always had and he will defend the president, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, abortion is an act that kills a person. It is not a political issue. It is not something to be argued about around a table with the majority having a consensus one way or the other. It's wrong in every single case. And I think that the president has an obligation, if he truly wants to help restore the culture of life, which he says he does, to make sure that the baby's lives are protected by making sure that the proper people are placed in positions of power beneath him in his administration. And I'm not seeing that.
Judy, do you know, is Alberto Gonzalez Roman Catholic?
I have no idea what religious conviction he has, if any.
What do you make of his statements? He was asked several times in the press, and I think he's been consistent in his response. When asked about his pro-life views, he says his views on abortion are not relevant. And you mentioned this before, he says, I believe in upholding the law. What
uh-huh.
does that mean? What do those two statements juxtaposed together mean to you?
They mean that he will uphold the law of the land, which happens to be Roe v. Wade. And that is totally unacceptable. A man who is put in the position of a judge, which he is and was, is a man who looks at the moral absolute natural law upon which most just laws are based. He can then characterize Roe versus Wade correctly as an imprudent abuse of the Constitution. And he can say that in public without apology. Other judges have said so. In fact, there's the famous case of Judge Robert Moylan in Nebraska in 1993, who resigned his post rather than rule that an adolescent teenager could have abortion without her parents knowing about it. He did exactly the opposite of what Gonzalez did. If you have integrity, and if you truly believe that the human being in the womb should be protected from murder, you will take actions to make that very clear. Gonzalez has never taken those actions, nor has Gonzalez ever made such statements.
Finally, if a President Kerry had been elected and had appointed in the first week, an attorney general with this in his past, as Gonzalez has, do you think the right would be praising the appointee?
No, absolutely not. They'd be all over the president. They'd be all over John Kerry like flypaper. No, that'd be quite the opposite reaction. I think what we've got here is a case of people, again, who advocated the reelection of a man who was disappointing them, and they refused to admit it and to say so in public. And isn't that sad? I mean, we're not here to reelect people to public office. We're here to defend babies who, by the way, have no voice other than ours. And we dare not be silent when their lives are at stake.
www.all.org is the website address for American Life League, www.all.org. Judy Brown, president of American Life League, thank you for being our guest. Keep up the good work.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Okay, folks, what do you think about Alberto Gonzalez as attorney general? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I sat for the better part of 24 hours waiting for someone, something to come in the email, something in the news as I perused the web to raise the question about Alberto Gonzalez. I said yesterday on the air, it's kind of strange. We've got a pro-choice attorney general replacing a very pro-life attorney general, and no one seems concerned about it. I found Judy Brown. She's concerned about it. There's an article here that came across, pro-lifers not thrilled with Gonzalez's choice, and it names a few people, but James Dobson's happy with it, Jay Sekulow's happy with it, Concerned Women for America's happy with it, Family Research Council's happy with it. Are you happy with it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Open lines until 4, then we'll discuss the ministry to soldiers with Chaplain John Wohlrabi. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with Buddy, who calls from his car. Hi, Buddy.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Well, I just, there's a lot I agree with on Judy, but I want you to know that Judy and her organization are not the only voice for the unborn child. And it seems to be that Judy has that complex. She believes that she's the only one speaking out. If everything was in the perfect condition, as far as our legislative, as far as everything that goes in America, then we could easily say that someone who says a statement like Gonzalez does, that I do the law of the land, is a person that would be to the negative.
All right, buddy, let me ask you this question, buddy, real quick. Alberto Gonzalez didn't just say he wants to uphold the law of the land, that is Roe. He also went on the Supreme Court of Texas, voted as part of the Supreme Court to allow a teenage girl, against Texas law, by the way, to get an abortion without her parents' consent. It's required in Texas. Parental consent is required. He voted to allow her to do it. And he vilified in public the dissenters on that court. Had John Kerry been elected president and put up someone who had done that in the past as attorney general, wouldn't you be concerned?
You know, I think that the question is a leading question, but I'll go ahead and answer it. All right. I think very seriously that what we're missing is the fact that Gonzalez himself is not a perfect person. But on the other hand, when he does choose to make a decision based on whatever knowledge was there at the time when he kept that from the parents, we don't know the situation between that girl and the parents. And another thing, Gonzalez shows that he can exercise a judgment. And when he does exercise a judgment, he can also exercise a judgment in other cases, in other situations, to the pro. Now, let me just make this one statement.
All right, make it quick, buddy.
On this one thing, it's very important. Gonzalez is saying that he will uphold the law of the land. He is not saying that he won't be a person who tries to change that law of the land. Our problem is in America is that we don't uphold any laws. I am very much pro-Bush. I'm sorry this lady's not pro-Bush. I'm sorry she's not pro because Bush is not perfect. I'm not just voting for Bush because he's from Texas.
All right, buddy, thank you very much. We know you're pro-Bush. He's giving him a pass, folks. That's a pass. That's what a pass looks like. That's what a pass looks like. Look, I really don't care if you're pro-Bush or not. Are you pro-life? Pro-life has an objective meaning. If you're a judge sitting on a Supreme Court of a state, and I don't know if Gonzalez is trying to pass himself off as pro-life or not, but when you rule that parents ought not to be informed of their teenage daughter's abortion when the law of that state requires that they be informed of that abortion, you can create whatever scenario you want to about why he might have ruled that way. You still have to explain why he ruled that way. Five oh five seven eight fifty one eight hundred seven three oh two seven two seven. Kurt's up next, calling from his car. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, Pastor Todd. Well, I think that what Judy Brown is pointing out is that we've had a news blackout in the Christian media, except for programs like yourselves and I think the Tim and Al show here locally and some others. But if you go to World Magazine, World Magazine has been cheerleading for President Bush for the past year, at least a year. No negative information has gotten to the over 100,000 subscribers of World Magazine about Bush. They have been 100% cheerleaders. The same is true of several other, Richard Land, the Southern Baptist, Jay Sekulow. They are 100% Bush cheerleaders, and I think they believe in their heart that they're defending the lesser of two evil. But I don't think it serves the Christian audience well when these Christian news organizations refuse to publish the negative things that George Bush does. And I noted in my church, I did not vote for Bush. I voted for Prutka. But I hesitated to speak to a lot of the people in my church because they are uninformed, and they passionately believed that Bush was pro-life, and they did not know that he's made so many universalist statements theologically. And I just didn't want to upset their apple cart. They were so passionate, so sincere,
well, Kurt,
that and the Christian news media, many have really, it's just been, they're continuing that. They're not putting the spotlight on Bush's errors, and
well,
Bush has made two huge errors. In his mandate was not for Iraq. His mandate was a moral mandate. The many well-intentioned voters out there voted for Bush because they did not want gay marriage, and they did not want those sorts of things. And yet, what is Bush doing with his mandate?
Kurt, thank you for the call. Look, I voted for President George W. Bush. I got the sticker on the back of my car, folks. I'm disappointed. I won't go so far as Judy Brown did to insinuate that he isn't pro-life. I think he is. What kind of pro-life is he? How qualified is this pro-life position? And one wonders, and Judy's got a great point. Talk is one thing, action is another. To ignore Arlen Specter, the fact that Arlen Specter is pro-choice, and there are no two ways around that one, you cannot turn that square circled. To ignore that and say, you know, I think he'd make a pretty good guy who will decide and basically be the gatekeeper for my Supreme Court justices. And you know, the right has been all over that one. They've been doing backflips on that one, jumping through fiery hoops on that one. Alberto Gonzalez comes along. You know what I think it is, folks? I think it's this simple. I think that Alberto Gonzalez, the right organizations look at him and say, look, he's a near lock to get this. The only skeleton in his closet is this whole Abu Ghraib torture thing that he did as president, the advice that he gave to the Bush administration on torture. And they think they can overcome that hurdle. And we'll have to choose our battles because we got to get Specter into the frying pan. So let's not worry about Gonzalez. Yes, he's not pro-life, but let's not worry about him. Now, I have no problem with picking your battles. Politics is the art of the possible. It is the art of the compromise. That's great. I'm all in favor of that. It has to be done. I have no problem choosing your battles, as long as you recognize and are willing to admit that the battle you're not going to fight is really a battle. It's one thing to say, look, Gonzalez is not pro-life, but we're choosing our battles. We haven't even gotten that from Focus on the Family, Family Research Council, Concerned Women for America, all these organizations that for every other reason I respect. We haven't gotten that. He's not pro-life, but we're not going to fight this battle. It's less than a perfect solution, but we're not going to fight this battle. That's called choosing your battles. Looking the other way is not choosing your battles. It's retreat. You say, come on, he just got elected. Got to stand behind the man. Look, I'll stand behind what he does I agree with, and I'm not going to stand behind what he does I don't agree with. It's that simple. Judy put it right on the line. If we care about the unborn, and we support those electorally who say they care about the unborn, our first duty is not only to get them into office. Our first duty is when they're in office, however they get there, to hold them accountable for what they say they do believe. All life welcomed and protected is the president's mantra. He has appointed an attorney general who will not necessarily be as vigorous as he could be on that point. What if Alberto Gonzalez in the next 2 months decides to lighten up on fighting for the partial birth abortion ban that's tied up in the courts? What if he's less than vigorous there and it ends up going down in flames? It will have made a difference, folks. It will have made a huge difference. The first pro-life, genuinely pro-life legislation passed in 30 years needs to be defended all the way to the goal line. Let me ask you a question. Would you have been upset if John Kerry had been elected and appointed a pro-choice attorney general? Would you have expected James Dobson to sound the alarm? Concerned Women for America to sound the alarm? Family Research Council to sound the alarm? Jay Sekulow and the ACLJ to sound the alarm? Christian Coalition, they sent out the most glowing press release on Alberto Gonzalez of them all. They didn't mention abortion, by the way. They mentioned terrorism, obscenity, and child porn. That's weird. They didn't mention abortion. Why? Because they couldn't. I'm all for supporting our president. I'm all for that. But let's be honest. The one price we shouldn't pay in the world of politics, which is the art of the possible and the art of the compromise, if you're going to compromise, admit you're compromising. Don't say, we never compromise on the life issue, and then compromise. Admit it. Okay? That's the way you live in the political world. Honesty. Honesty should not be a casualty of the realities of politics, especially for Christians who are pro-life. When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time, something to think about, folks. We're going to spend some time talking about ministry to soldiers with Captain John Woolrobbie.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.